This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Watching us, you know exactly who we have, but if you're not, mystery guest, please reveal yourself.
Former co-host Wes McDowell from Chicago. What's going on, boys and girls?
Oh man, I would call you host, and then I would call Nick and myself the co-host, because you were,
well, you know,
you ran it, baby.
You were the animal.
Romantics. It was my dream, and you guys came on board with it, and I was really happy to have you. And then unfortunately, I had to step away and hand over the reins, but I'm happy to be back again, like I always thought I would be.
Yeah, it's taken us a while, but we totally talked about how this would come to surface.
I know. It took a while. Is your connection okay, Wes? Because I think it was a little bit iffy.
You glitched a little. Now you're blurry.
Okay.
At least for me.
It's
oh good.
As you guys know, like with Riverside, it'll the recordings will upload
in the background.
Quality, so
yeah. Do this. Make sure your video is not on the highest resolution. I think if you go to your gear. Okay.
Yeah, it's not. It's on 720p.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. How do I make sure of that, Nick? Where do I go?
In the little gear, I think.
Yep.
You would have had to have put it to advanced, which it should be on just normal right now, standard. It should be okay. You would have had to like actually put advanced on.
Yeah.
So don't worry about it.
Okay.
Cool.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Cool. So, all right. So Wes, tell us a little bit about where it all started. Cause like, I don't even know a lot of the story about how you gave me little bits and pieces back in the day, but where did the Deeply Graphic Design Cast
start? Let's just be transparent that it might've shocked Wes to hear from me. Maybe, what was it, 2.5 weeks ago now, 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
I texted Wes and I'm like, how's it going? What you doing? I miss you. Want to come back and be a guest?
And I was like, absolutely. I can't believe it took you so long to ask. But it was great to hear from you. I was really happy to have a little conversation with you a few weeks ago. And now we can actually like do it proper here on the internet. Like we're meant to. So,
sure.
In terms of getting the show started, I mean, year are we talking? Like 2010, 2011, I think. Like it's been.
Yeah. We went on our blind date in 2010.
Yeah. It felt like a blind date. Yeah. So the story is I was in Seattle and I had been listening to, what was the name of that podcast? It was a design related podcast.
Yeah.
Kristen Fisher were the hosts.
Gosh,
it was just like
so
a really fun listen.
That period feels like a massive different life.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the name?
For sure. What? The name of the podcast?
What was the name of the podcast that you were listening? Yeah.
I wish I remembered. I'm trying to rack in my brain with it. I don't remember. But anyway, I would just listen to it on
there
my
were only
walk
a
to
few at the time.
Yeah. I mean, they were. I was living in Seattle. I had like a 2-mile trek to work every day. So I'd listen to this thing and I got all caught up in the back catalog of it. And then one day they just stopped doing it. And so I thought to myself, like, well, someone should be doing a show like this. Like, I felt like I could probably do some kind of attempt at it. So I asked around, like, who would be willing to co-host with me. I asked my sister, who's a designer. She just said, "How much are we getting paid?" And I said, "Nothing." She That's said, right. "No, thank you." And then I had like one of those temp agencies, basically, who would hook you up, people in Seattle up with like the temp gigs that are so common there. And I asked them, smart department is what it was called. And I said, "Do you know of any like
smart department?" Women? That's who it was. Yeah. Yeah.
I knew I wanted to do it with like, I knew my friend Brandon was going to do it with us. You remember Brandon? And I thought we needed like a female voice too. It couldn't just be three dudes. Like, who's a smart designer girl that we can come, that can come on with us? And then smart department threw your name in the ring, Mikkel. So we had a blind date at some brewery there to kind of see if the chemistry was good. And it was. And then we got started.
Yeah. That was at the base of Queen Anne Hill. Where did we go?
Yeah.
I think it was like a swanky Mexican place. Anyways.
It was high end. I felt a little out of place, but you know.
I love it.
We started with my friend Brandon, and then so Nick, you are our third co-host.
Yeah, because you had someone in between, right?
Sam Cox from the UK.
Yes. It was a revolving door of people that just couldn't get their schedules to line up. And, you know, then you blessed us and you were able to show up on time and everything. So you got the job.
That's what made me feel like there was an opening, because I heard the pain and like the, well, someone's not here, but we're going to continue anyways. And I was like, I think they need a new co-host.
Yeah. And did you go into us, right? Is that how it happened?
I think so.
Because Wes, same exact story. When I was still working at my job, the full-time thing, and really wanted to make a move out. And I lived so far away from my office that I'd drive super early just to avoid traffic, but I had a good hour to spare. So I would listen to podcasts before anyone else got there. And that's how I found you guys. Cause I was like, oh, this is awesome. There's people talking about their own design business. Like that's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Mm-hmm. And bitching about clients and all the good stuff that everyone wanted to hear.
Just in hindsight now, it's funny that when it was Wes, Brandon, Mikkel. Brandon was out of was in Oregon,
he's
right?
The Bay Area. He was in the Bay Area.
Oh, he was in the Bay Area. Okay. Right. And so, there were schedule conflicts. Takes a village, right? And then, so what's funny to me is that we were like, oh, let's see how Sam can do on the other, you know, in a different continent.
Yeah. So needless to say, the schedules never lined up. It was always just kind of like an afterthought for certain people. So at that point, it's like, you know, the scheduling nightmares are just not
that can be hard.
Love Brandon. I remember liking Sam. Like, I honestly have not, no offense, Sam, I haven't like thought of that in like so long. Like, because he must not have been on the show for that long in the grand scheme of things. Because like,
yeah, I don't remember the length of time, but we had a cadence going. I mean, he was on a fair number of shows for sure.
Yeah. You did at least two Christmas episodes with us. I remember that.
Okay. Oh, that's cool.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a good way to remember it.
I remember he had the Hello Kitty idea, right?
Yeah.
That
the Chinese lucky cat.
The gold, with the wave, yes.
Mm-hmm. Was that on his gift list?
Thing to bring to a designer.
Oh, that's great.
Isn't that random and totally funny?
Kind of ahead of the trend there, because now it's very trendy.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And then, so we had a good, I'd say, I can't remember how many we were at. We were at least in the 200 zone, I'd say, of episodes by the time you wanted to make a change. And like, but you were like kind of in the background starting to really get into the video thing right before kind of finding a different path. Talk about like that a little bit.
Yeah. So if anyone, you know, I don't know how much your listeners would even know about this, but I made a pivot to YouTube. So I started doing that probably in like 2016 or 17. not talking so much about design and not talking to designers. Like this show is always a yeah. little weird for me because I love talking about what we talked about, but I never saw like how it could help me get more business because it's like, we're talking to other designers. We're not talking to people who could become mm-hmm. clients. So I decided, okay, let's go ahead and go on YouTube and try to do that. Something I used to think was too hard to do. Cause I used to think like, well, clients aren't going to be like trying to learn design or websites or anything on YouTube. They're just going to hire someone to do it for them. As it turns out, that's not really the case. Like a lot of people will attempt a DIY solution before they'll hire someone. And a lot of people, that's all they'll do. They want to learn from somebody. They want to take charge of it. So started YouTube talking about web design principles, like, and especially not even web design so much as just what makes a website work for your business. It's the messaging. It's here's the pages you need. Here's what you should leave out because it confuses people. So I talked all about that stuff and just general marketing, Facebook ads, all that good stuff. And then at a certain point, I think what happened with this show was I just got kind of to a point where I'm not super into talking about the design anymore. Like my brain mm-hmm. had just kind of gone away from that. And now I'm focusing on like conversion stuff. So it's like for me to come on and host a design podcast at a certain point seemed like a little bit of a, like someone else should probably be doing this, not me, essentially. So that's
yeah, that's totally fair. And yeah. but on the other end too, alongside that fact, we don't gain any clientele from this either. It's not prospecting. Right. It's not right. yeah. And but I to be totally upfront and transparent about the positive nature that this brings to my life is that community feel. The mm-hmm. potentiality of networking is always there.
Yeah.
I don't have collective published communication via social media with listeners, but it's nice to see some that DM based on their own story or complication or request. And then because otherwise I'm not on social media whatsoever.
A nice replacement instead of
a little bit of that, a little bit of that. And
so much on there.
I learn from you and my research helps me keep me on my toes with respect to, I don't know, it could be anywhere from like tech, you know, the latest technology tips and tricks or, you know, how to rework a situation with any given account that hadn't occurred to me when we talk through scenarios.
Yeah.
But, another thing to be fair about is that I don't know. I'd be interested to run a poll to understand how many listeners, loyal or new, are in the creative field altogether. And by that, I mean, are they designers? And maybe they're not. Maybe they're in the creative industry, such as photography, but they're not in files mm-hmm. working on marketing schematics for any given project. And so in that vein, I think it's really lovely to have Wes back on to talk about how he transitioned from that type of that nature of pulling business and servicing business into how he's catering to a number of target audiences now through across a number of industries. And that's really fascinating for me to understand. I would love for you to talk a little bit about those that do take your courses, those that you learn from in order to maybe shift gears and head down a slightly different avenue with respect to how you broadcast your courses and trainings and talks all together. That can really serve so many.
Yes. You're asking about kind of like what my different, like what I, who I talk to and what I get out of it.
Yeah. Let's review that if it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm here to talk. I'm an open book. So, I talk mainly to small business owners themselves. I don't, there's plenty of people in marketing that watch my videos, because that's the thing. Like, it's a marketing type channel, right? It's not about design anymore. It's about marketing in the broader sense. There are a lot of marketers who watch, but I never talk to them. Like, I will get comments on my videos saying, tell us how to get more clients for my like Facebook agency. I'm like, I'm not an expert in that. Like, I am here to talk to the small business owner, like the service business owner who wants to do this for themselves. So that's my audience. And I try to stay in my lane with that. So when you say like, I'm talking to a lot of different people, I kind of am, because it's a lot of different industries, but what they all have in common is they own a service-based business. I don't talk about e-commerce. I don't try to tell you how to sell, you know, your sweatshirts on Facebook ads, anything like that. It's like plumbers, designers, architects, dog trainers, that kind of thing. So I teach what I need to teach, like just whatever I feel like is going to be something you need to know, like how to structure your website, how to do Facebook. I actually stopped talking about Facebook ads as much. I'm now pivoting more toward talking about YouTube itself.
Cool.
And how service business owners can use the power of YouTube to get more clients. So I talk about all these different things that all serve basically one purpose, and that's getting you more clients. So how do you get people, how do you use digital marketing to get people to your website? Then what do you put on your website to properly sell them on your service? That's what I talk about. From there, I do sell a course which teaches these service business owners how to come up with the messaging that's going to move the needle for them, and then how to turn that raw messaging into the actual copy, and then finally how to turn that into like a finished website using WordPress and Elementor.
That's cool.
So it's like basically a website in a box that, and it sounds like I'm trying to sell it. I'm not trying to sell it. I'm just telling you what it is. Basically, moving you through all the way from the messaging that converts all the way through actually here it is, it's live and online. So that's like the main.
And are they actually working? Are they actually the ones like building the sites for themselves along with you?
Yes, because it really is easy. Like, I don't know if you guys have played around in Elementor or anything. Have you used that? It's super easy for anybody to pick it up. And what I've done is I've included like templates with the course so that people basically can just mix and match. Like, okay, here's 10 different hero sections. Pick the one you like and then delete the rest, and then you customize it. Then you go to the next section, you do the same thing. So anyone can do it. The hardest part getting them to actually, like, some of them make really bad design choices because they're not designers. So like the challenge there is within the course, like, how do you kind of, for lack of a better term, like beat that out of people, like choose, like putting the drop shadows and all the text and everything. And like,
that can't be assumptive. That would be hard.
Yeah.
That's a good element you bring to the table.
What's that, Nick? Yeah.
That's a good element that you bring to the table. Just your design background could be that person. Like, imagine if you were just the marketing person doing what you're doing, and you couldn't give them those little areas of finesse that you know are going to work also with design of the website, right? It shouldn't look like a PowerPoint slide. It should look like a presentable marketing, you know, communications piece.
Yeah,
exactly. And I mean, you're right. And I guess I do really draw on my design background a lot. But it's just like the way I look at design for a small business is it has to serve a function of, here's how design can help you actually sell. Like, design can never be, and I know I'm talking to a bunch of designers here who are listening, so they might be mad at me, but like, design is like, it's not the goal. It's a tool to help to help the business.
Yeah,
that's a good way to put it. You know? We're all doing things to make the sale or the conversion at the end, right?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Or it's art. Yeah.
Whatever spot you're in of that process, we're all doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well said.
What do you feel are the pros of not, like, what's it like just not having clients? Like, I think that's got to be, I'm sure there's pros and cons, and there's probably a lot that you miss, but I'm assuming 90% of that is like, has that made your your flow and kind of like you're more in control of what you want with this career rather than the living with and holding hands with the clients as you did back before this?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, do you see the smile on my face? No offense to my old clients. I did have a lot of great clients. So what I've done basically in my business, just for context here. So when I first started YouTube, I was still working with web design clients, like full service web design clients would build your whole website for you, design it, all that good stuff. As the time went on and the YouTube channel grew and grew, I was able to charge more for that. I was able to be a lot choosier in which clients I was choosing to work with. And then at a certain point, I pivoted toward the course and pivoted away from actually doing full websites for clients. But at that same time, I was still doing, I added a new thing to the mix, which was consulting, hourly consulting, where I would just get on the phone with you for a half hour or an hour and just like troubleshoot, like we talk about what you need, whether it's ads, whether it's website, whatever. And I would just consult with you for that amount of time. And I was able to charge more and more and more for that to a certain point when I just stopped even wanting to do that. I kind of prefer having my time to just be able to work on my stuff, work on my videos, work on my marketing, and then have all the money just kind of coming in from not for me working one-on-one, but working one-to-many. And it's like,
there you go.
It's worked out very well. I definitely make more than I did. And I feel a lot better. Like when I wake up in the morning and I don't have a million meetings that day with clients.
Yeah. Recurring income.
Tell us what that's like.
I mean, honestly,
the thing though is I still have meetings. I'm actually offloading those a little bit. Because with the program that I sell, one thing I used to offer was one-on-one website reviews with me for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You're done. I'll check it over with you. I've stopped doing that now. What I've done now is now we have a once a week when you join, you get 3 months of free Zoom meetings every Thursday. You come, you ask a question, you can have your website reviewed by me. But that way, my meeting time is now 1 hour a week that I meet with like.
And my can anybody, and is that all of them can join in at the same time? Or how does that work?
Yeah, but they're limited to 3 months of it. So, like, basically, once you join, you get 90 days
wonderful.
Of weekly meetings, me checking over your work, whatever you need. And then you've graduated out, and then. So they have to make room for the new people so that the group remains small enough for everyone to get personal attention.
That's fantastic.
Did you have to research how to embody these so-called packages? You know what I mean? Like this is strategic what you've done here so that onboarding and offboarding is in rotation and you don't have an overwhelming number of individuals at any given time.
Yeah. I mean, You live and learn basically because I used to offer a version of this just like with a Facebook group and Facebook Lives. At first it was lifetime access. So there are people in the group who still have lifetime access because they were promised that. Are they active in the group? No, not anymore. Because people tend to like they're active when they're active and then they kind of filter themselves out.
Yes.
But no, I learned this simply from listening to a lot of podcasts about like online courses and memberships. As well as I've been in several of them. So I see like what other people do that makes the most sense. And I think.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
You learn from the best. Yeah.
That's so cool, man. And then so now the YouTube thing you were saying too, like that could be a whole other revenue stream as far as just in viewers and things like that. And how's that going? Because I know that's been like something you were really dedicated in for so long.
Yeah. Are you talking about like just making money directly from YouTube now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the other thing when you're on YouTube, it takes a bit, like you've got to build up, what is it? 4,000 watch hours, I think.
And 2,000 subscribers or something. I think there's some threshold.
There's thresholds to before you qualify, but then once you do, you are qualified for the, you know, YouTube partner program, where we've all seen YouTube ads, right? They're annoying as hell, but they pay the bills. Like, so people run ads on my channel and then I get 55% of that money basically. And normally that money kind of sucks. Like if you're doing cat videos, yeah, or like prank videos, the entertainment style stuff. But if you're doing, yeah, business content like I'm doing, it's through the, I mean, I'm making six figures on YouTube ads alone. And that's just like incredible. One part of, yeah, the business. So it's like, yeah, it can really add up.
And also your content is discoverable forever, right? It's all, someone's, yeah, going to be needing stage one and they're going to find it. And it's also repeatable. Like, I think someone might watch it again and again to really grasp what you're trying to say too. It's almost educational, mm-hmm, you know, for your business and all those things. Cause like, I've noticed, I'm really like so curious because now YouTube's all I have. I basically don't even have cable any longer. I just, yeah, love like customizing the subscriptions of what you want to watch. And I could see, I'm always curious at looking at the numbers of some of these people that are doing. I'm like, I looked at someone that I follow and I was like laughing because I'm like, oh, they're probably a fraction of the numbers that this guy has, whatever. And they were astronomically more. So it's kind of neat to see. It's not so like you can't just say like, oh, this one's probably making bank on it. It's those ones that, like you're saying, your formula and why that works better. It's actually business helping business.
Yeah. I mean, those ads are just a lot more expensive to run. So think about it. Like if you're just, when you watch like the entertainment channels, you're seeing ads for like HelloFresh and, yeah, stuff like that. Yeah. Or just like Tide. Yeah.
What do you get? What would an ad be on yours then?
See, I have YouTube Premium because I'm fancy now.
Same
so
here.
I never have to see them.
I know, yeah, yeah. I know. Like,
yeah. But I mean, it's basically other people probably like selling marketing courses, and they're selling it to,
okay,
small business owner. So okay, they're niching down.
Okay.
So small. They're like,
right,
I want to reach small business owners who are watching Wes's channel. So those ads just cost way more. And then I get to,
oh,
like,
I didn't even know that was the case.
That is something I was not aware of either. That does make sense now. It totally makes, yeah, sense now.
Mm-hmm.
So
the other thing that I make money through on YouTube is affiliate sales. So
yes.
Basically, yeah, I do these tutorials where I teach people how to create a website with Elementor. Elementor is an affiliate, yes, but they're kind of a bad affiliate program. You don't get much from it. Mm-hmm. But all the web hosting companies, that is like a gold mine for affiliate commissions. So like I chose Bluehost, love them or hate them. I get people saying, oh, who cares? Like Bluehost is terrible. I disagree. I think they're fine. I think they're all about the same. And Bluehost makes it easiest.
Yeah.
And they're kind of like,
yeah,
it's so cheap that like,
yeah,
you, right,
can't go wrong with it. And I get a pretty good commission every time someone.
Didn't I see that Elementor is offering hosting now though?
It's not good hosting.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You heard it here first, guys.
It's really hard to use. Like, yeah, they tried to get me to go on board with it. And I tried it and it's like, it was so hard to use. And Elementor doesn't do hosting. Elementor does what they do. And even,
yeah, it's interesting that they added that tier. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, cause even their main product, as much as I love it, it's pretty buggy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like they should really focus more on like making that just work perfectly,
yeah,
versus trying to like do too much with too little. So.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
Sorry, Elementor, I love you.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I mean, they're at the end of the day, we've discovered whether it's Elementor Builder or Bricks, they all have glitches. They all have bugs.
Yeah.
They all have employed developers to engineer and fix and troubleshoot these instances. However, what's interesting that's evolved from those discoveries is that now I have partnered with developers that have opted to customize their builder entirely on their own.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's, I haven't even worked with a developer in the longest time. Like I, even when I was, the last time I was develop, I was like providing websites for clients. I was doing it all myself with Elementor. So it was just, it was so nice though. Cause before that I used to work with developers and like they would drag these projects on so long. It was just like, it was one of the worst experiences.
I have a lot to contribute to that.
I don't know if you know, but we've been trying to do, now that we're doing video for all of our episodes, we're putting it on YouTube as well. And, you know, hoping to get to that 1,000 subscription thing one day, just to play around and see what
that
could do.
It's a big, why not type of,
Yeah. And since we're doing it, we've always did Skype back, even back in the day, but we weren't recording it. But so I figured it was like, why not try? And I know a lot of listeners are probably like, I think it's the new frontier. I love looking at data on it. I love seeing new success stories. Mm-hmm. I love seeing someone go from like 40 followers to like 10,000. You know, you could see people being successful with it. What, either for us or for others, what are some of the things you've learned in YouTube that would be instrumental to anybody starting out?
Yeah, to try to grow a channel, essentially.
Yeah. Okay. To truly get to that point where you're actually getting some ads. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a couple things to really keep in mind. The first is you definitely want to, you want to have some kind of a strategy in terms of what it is you're talking about. So what you guys have is essentially a video podcast, which is like, it's a big trend right now. And it is, they are saying that YouTube is going to be the new platform for podcasts. So it's good you guys are doing
that.
The one thing I say, the tricky part about doing it that way is people don't generally sit and watch a long form thing on YouTube where it's talking heads. So what I would recommend for you guys is if you can find some B-roll to kind of put over things sometimes, or like if you could show stuff you're talking about or whatever, start the episode with like some kind of a sizzle reel of like what's coming up, like the most juicy bits, like if you watch Colin and Samir or Creator Science, it's like kind of what those guys do. They make it seem kind of like juicy stuff is coming up later, and then kind of go into it from there. Just for people in general though, talking head is fine. I would recommend you gotta zazz it up a little bit with like some B-roll, some graphics on screen. It is true that people are gravitating away from the crazy edits that have been really popular. People do want to kind of settle in with something.
Yeah.
But there has to be a little something to keep people interested, whether it's just from the scripting standpoint, weaving story in. This is one thing I've learned lately, like the use of metaphor. I believe in tightly scripting. I know a lot of, and it doesn't work for a video podcast. This is a different thing.
Sure, yeah.
But if someone's creating, by the way, hope you guys aren't hearing the vacuuming upstairs. Are you hearing that?
No.
Okay, good.
No. Can you hear the siren outside? I know. It's a mess.
So what was I saying? So just the use of metaphor to kind of make a concept you're talking about more relatable. I've been doing this a lot in my videos.
Oh, cool.
And I think it's kind of paying off. The idea of answering, what are the three questions people are going to have when they come into this video, right? Is it like, if based on the title and the thumbnail of it, what are the three things they're going to ask themselves? And then in the beginning of the video, you want to have a hook. And then you want to say, in this video, we're going to cover this, this, and this. Those three questions that they want to have answered.
Yeah.
The thumbnail, the title, super important. Like everyone says, you have to even have that before you even start scripting the video. I've actually got a YouTube producer now who helps me with all, like at the beginning of every cycle of videos, he's like, okay, these are the titles I think we should go with. And then I retrofit like what the content's going to be in them.
Gotcha.
Because like it's that important.
Wow. Yeah.
I've seen I saw a great interview with Mr. Beast, and he was saying how he goes through like 200 to 300 drafts of his thumbnail for each one. And very similar to what you said, it's 90% of that is the outline or the spark of what they actually will end up filming. So it's done first in a lot of ways to be like, he knows what the audience is going to want to see. And he bases it all off of that.
Right. And I don't want people to take away the wrong thing from that, though, because like people always forget when they hear these things. Mr. Beast spends like $5 million on a video.
Oh, of course. Like, it's a whole other story.
He's in a different league, a different ball game. For the rest of us, I do two thumbnails for every video. If one doesn't perform in the first few hours, we swap it out with the other one. So, I mean, you can do things a little like start with where you're at. You know, I have an editor now. Like, I don't do any of my own editing anymore. But yeah, I mean, it's just starting where you're at. Don't get overwhelmed. Just if you want to do YouTube, you got to start. That's the first thing.
pretty much.
Because even if you're nervous, like most people are so nervous about going on camera, what I always tell them is don't even worry about it, because no one's going to see it anyway. Your first video, when you're the most nervous, no one will ever watch that video. So you're getting in your reps to get them out for yourself. Mm-hmm. And as your confidence grows, so will your audience. And then by the time you reach a critical mass where you've got an actual audience, will some of them go back and watch that first terrible video? Probably, but by now you can laugh about it and just be like, yeah, that was terrible, but look how much better I am now.
I'm a consumer.
Yeah.
Just delete them.
Just be in control in the driver's wheel with that. Yeah.
Is there a good length that everybody is trying to like, I've been noticing too, like you got 3-hour conversations, right? You have 4-minute things sometimes. And then I see people are doing a variety of it. Like it's not the same model every episode. They're giving variety. What's your take on that?
Yeah. So, I mean, you're exactly right about that. Videos can work of any length. And I know it's like, you want the answer of like 10 minutes is perfect. But, and I will say like, if anyone wants like an actual answer, for me, 8 to 12 minutes, I think is kind of the sweet spot. That's what I always shoot for. But having said that, you don't want to take a 5-minute idea and make it 8 minutes, because then it's just going to be like a bunch of fluffy crap that
Or the other way around.
But then long videos are actually having their, we do have a definite like time gap here, time delay here. Nick, what'd you say?
Oh, I was saying it's the other way around too. You don't want to take an hour, 2-hour conversation and narrow it down to 15 minutes. Like it kind of goes both ways. And you were just saying like the idea of what long form is going crazy right now.
Yeah. Long form is really having its day right now because again, they're watching YouTube more on TV than they ever did. Like that's how I watch most YouTube. Like I'm with you, Nick. I do watch TV, but I watch a whole lot more YouTube and it's on the TV. So people are settling in with it for longer. People will want to watch something that's like an hour, sometimes even 2 hours if the information's really good. So, you know, don't take a 2-hour idea and dumb it down to be, I mean, you could do that too. That's the beauty of it. You can have the 2-hour version. You can have the 30-minute version. You can have the 5-minute version, and all three can work on your channel together.
Perfect. I love it. We were talking too, I think, about doing like a follow-up to this, because I love the idea of that. We brought the pivoting that you've done to our listeners. Like, I think so many people right now are thinking about what's next. Is there something now that they feel like a little more control of their careers and what they're doing? And then second, this just idea of like feeling comfortable trying out video in whatever way, shape or form, and to like ask questions and then come back in a few weeks and we can kind of like go through some of those questions from the listeners. It'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Cool.
Yeah, I'd love to. That would be cool. I love answering real questions from people. So
yeah. There you go. Where can they find you, Wes? Give them a shout out.
Yeah, just go to the Wes McDowell YouTube channel. Just search Wes McDowell and there I will be.
Perfect. All
perfect.
Right.
Oh, so wonderful to have your voice on this again. Sorry that there's been a little bit of a disconnect with the
connection. Hopefully we did okay.
Yeah. Hopefully it buffers through there just fine for us. I know.
We are the masters, though, of re-recording episodes.
Totally.
Oh, really? Isn't that
oh man.